Authentic Wellness Radio.
All right, everyone, welcome to episode number 53 of Authentic Wellness Radio. Firstly, thank you so much to everyone who wrote in after the last podcast that we did with Dr. Kelly Brogan. Really enjoyed hearing all your feedback on that one. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that show, jump back on the podcast and listen to that one. But this week we're talking about something completely different. We're not talking about the chemistry of the brain. We're talking about the mind, body, and I've got someone on the line who's going to do exactly that for us. Her name is Sarah Stewart. She's the founder of the Holistically Slim Movement and a program called Meditate Slim, which I went through not that long ago, which I absolutely loved. She is a board-certified holistic health practitioner. We'll discuss what that is in just a second. She's also a Reiki master, certified in plant-based nutrition and disease prevention, certified Ann Wigmore Detox and Rebuild Practitioner from the Creative Health Institute, and a certified health coach from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting. So happy to be here.
It's awesome to have you, but it sounds like you've been very busy getting yourself well-educated in the world of...
Yes, it's been a 12-year journey. And through the process of healing myself, it's been even a longer journey. So I'm really excited to be here and sharing that with everyone.
Now, that was kind of the first thing that I wanted to hear from you was sharing, because you have a really interesting story, like just about everyone who comes on this show, about how it is that you actually got into the world of holistic health. So what was it that happened 12 years ago with your father?
Yeah, so my father was diagnosed with terminal cancer about 13 years ago, and he decided to go a different route than what the doctors recommended. So even though it was terminal and they pretty much, you know, said you don't really have a chance of living, this is what we would recommend to give you any chance. And he decided, nope, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to choose to use nutrition to heal myself. So for 7 months, we brought in a vegan chef, and he changed his entire diet, did juicing every day, changed his supplement protocol, got very mindful and removed all distraction from his life, and really built a protocol around mindfulness and changing his subconscious and really doing a lot of affirmations and positive thinking against what the doctors had recommended. And within 7 months, the cancer was completely cured, which really sparked this light inside me, because at the time I was a little bit angry. I was like, you're going against authority. You're going against what these doctors who have, you know, 12 years of experience at least are telling you. You know, these are top doctors at universities, and what are you doing? And he just said, trust me, you're going to see a miracle. And within that time he was cured. And that really has just changed my entire mindset on what nutrition can actually do for your health. But then I ended up falling into the world of fashion and becoming a model. And in that time, I developed my own eating disorder. So on one hand, I saw how powerful food could be, but then on the other hand, I saw how destructive it could be if you don't have the right mindset. So through healing my own conditions, I saw both sides, the healing aspects and how important it is to be mindful and respect your body and love your body. And there's that component as well.
Now, it's one thing for us to hear about all these stories of people, you know, miraculously healing from cancer based on things that are totally against what conventional medicine tells us to do. What do you think your dad's journey would have looked like if he'd done what the doctors told him to, and how do you think that?
You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, because he already believed, the problem was is that he was already told that he was going to die. So it's interesting. I've had, you know, several conversations with him. Like, why do you think your journey was different than most people? And he said, it's because I had to reprogram my subconscious. So often people are told, oh, you know, I'm going to die. So it's their belief, it's stuck within them. And our thoughts have a lot to do with what we manifest in life and what we create. And I've started looking at these different programs, the Gerson program, the Ann Wigmore program, the Hippocrates Institute, and really seeing why are people healing themselves and why is it not working for other people. And I believe, just based on the amount of people I've seen heal themselves, a huge component of that is rethinking. And I can't say for sure what would have happened, but I don't believe he would be here today, just because it would have just destroyed his whole immune system, and they wanted to take a kidney out, which is even harder to heal. So I'm really proud to have someone in my life that really, instilled this in me, that it's more about our minds and what we're thinking on a daily basis and social interaction and who we have around us and the support system. He was very conscious to really build a community of healers around him, where my community, like our friends, were very resistant to it and very confused. And he was like, I need people in my life to be supportive. So I'm going to build this community around me. And it was all healers that really just took him in and filled him with love and support and believed in it so much so that he could believe in it as well.
This is fascinating. What did your dad do before he got diagnosed with cancer? Because that's a really interesting thing for someone, especially someone who's just been told you're about to die, to
Yeah,
say, I need to reprogram my subconscious mind. What did he do? Who did he learn this from?
yeah. So, and I know it's incredible. So he was a public speaker for 20 years, and when I was a kid, I was traveling around with him, listening to him speak. And before the internet, everything was door to door and handing out flyers, and he was constantly really trying to help. He created an institute for battered women and children, and really help them see how their what was going on with their parents and what happened in their childhood was now affecting their adult. So he was really ingrained in this world of spirituality his whole life. And he, I grew up listening to the little Deepak Chopra cassette tapes and like Wayne Dyer and these, the founders of kind of this movement. And unfortunately, my father, he ended up going a different route and starting to do real estate and some other things, but that spiritual kind of instillment was always inside of me since I was young and part of him. And even though he taught it to us, when I came out into the world of my peers and like my community, I became like, wow, I'm too cool for this now. Like this isn't for me. And it's funny how it ended up saving my own life years later when I was in the hospital dying. It was what I needed to come back to as well.
That's fascinating. I feel like you're very lucky to have someone like that as a father. So let's talk about this kind of concept that the show's based around, which is mind body. Now, when you say mind body, what do you actually mean? Can you give us a definition?
Yeah, so when I discuss the mind-body connection, I focus on the fact that they're not separate. And I think the problem is so often we see diet after diet after diet, and we're only focused on the physical. So the problem that we face is that when we're only focused on the physical or the urgency, right? Like we need to lose weight for X event, or we need to lose weight for a person, or we need to lose weight for something outside of ourselves, we become disconnected from our truth and ourselves and who we are and what we need to be alive. So there is this connection between what we think and what's happening in our body as well. And finding that again and instilling that in ourselves and creating that balance is really what is sustainable for long term. It can't be separate. So I always just say we have to focus on the mind, body, and spirit and all aspects of our lives. It can't just be just losing weight. It has to be how every single area of our life, whether it's finances, career, all of these things are impacting our health, our weight, and how we feel and our overall well-being.
That's interesting. I think everyone who's listening to this is totally on board when they hear you say, we have to approach everything and be really holistic about this. But how many layers to the mind body is there? I mean, everyone's probably familiar with this concept of the subconscious mind, and you mentioned that earlier with your dad. What exactly is the subconscious mind, and what kinds of thoughts?
Yeah, so that's where the challenge lies, and a lot of people don't understand that is that the subconscious mind is, some doctors and experts say it can be thousands of times stronger. So every experience that we have, or everything we see, and all of our five senses are constantly picking up imagery, and the experience is being stored in our brain. So our entire lives, we have all of these different experiences being stored that are now programming us to basically react in a certain way. So let's say you had a lot of fear as a kid, or you saw certain things, or your parents didn't have a relationship with food. And I even have one client who recently I've been working with, and her mother said once to her, "You'll always be a big girl." And that story has stuck with her for her whole life because of that one experience that's been stored way back in the subconscious mind. So even though our conscious mind, like what we're thinking on a daily basis, is yes, I want to lose weight, I want to be healthy, our behavior and our habits are really being dictated by our subconscious mind. And that's something that we do have power to control and change and shift. And a lot of times we've been told, oh, you have to go relive your past over and over again. And we're starting to see that you don't actually have to go relive these things. We just have to reprogram our thinking to believe that there's a new way, which then we can create habits around that, which then can shift our lives. We can't just think that thinking is enough. We have to actually create the habits around reprogramming so that we can consistently sustain long term. And that's something that my goal is to really get this information out there where I can help individuals do that reprogramming and find out where the patterns are stuck and where they're kind of self-sabotaging, and then use tools and techniques to do that.
So, is there any pattern to the kinds of thoughts that the subconscious mind holds on to? I mean, you just mentioned one that was someone's mum saying, "Oh, you'll always be big," or it could be something else like, "No one will ever love me." Does the subconscious mind only like to have those negative thoughts that can hold us back in life, or does it have
It has good, I mean, I believe it has good ones as well. I think the way we interact with the world is really, really dictated by what we saw as a child. Because when we grow up, when we were first integrated into this world, we were being taught how to do everything, right? We were being taught how to interact. We were being taught how to communicate. We were being taught how to eat. We were being taught how to, if movement was good, we were being taught how to learn on an intellectual level. So all of the things that we were taught are now influencing the way we live. And my coach, he always says, you must unlearn these things. You must unlearn to get to a place where you can find true happiness because you were always taught what to be doing. So, and I think social conditioning as well, like the social media and the world we live in is so consumed by constant inundation, where we're like constantly seeing all the time, we're constantly inundated with all this information at such a fast rate that our subconscious, it's going into our subconscious, but we're not even processing it on our conscious mind of like what we're actually seeing. So that's why meditation becomes so important, because when you remove everything and you find your truth and really see what it is for you, you begin to learn the best way and the best approach for you, not what you've actually been taught. Because how you've been taught might not actually be the best anymore, because the world's changed, how we live changed. Everything is constantly evolving.
Now, when I was doing your Meditate Slim program not that long ago, one of the exercises that popped up in there was to spend time in silence, but you say with a very specific goal in mind. So I absolutely loved reading this, and it's one of the very few times when I've just stood up in the middle of doing something and said, "No, I got to do this right now," and do immediately what I was told. So you say what, or you recommend that people spend an entire day in silence. The idea being to try and pull out any recurring themes or patterns that keep popping up in your thoughts and then assess how they're either helping or hindering your way to success. So, do you want to talk a little bit about this exercise and what?
So I recommend, I mean, as often as possible. So the thing is like we don't spend much time by ourselves anymore, whether even if we think we are, even if we're like, oh, I had a full day by myself, how much has it been listening to someone's podcast or, which is amazing, but like how much time is it social influence? So like having your TV on the whole time or just walking down the street and hearing people talk about politics or what's going on with that. We're constantly being inundated by information, also text messages and just going through your Instagram feed is influence in itself. So I always say really take a day at least, and once a month sounds crazy, but take a day where you can literally just do nothing and be in the present moment. So even if you say, okay, I can't take a day off, be in the present of folding your laundry in quiet, doing chores in quiet, moving through your space quietly, doing yoga at home in quiet without even having the influence of a teacher, because in that space and is the only time that you can actually hear yourself. So I always say it's really to heal, it's important to hear yourself. You have to create the space and this kind of buffer in order to be able to hear where these patterns are coming from. And these patterns might not just be about weight loss, it could be about finances or your career or so many different things that you need to hear. And when we quiet our minds and meditate or even take a day in silence, it's important then to take action on what you hear that's best for you, because you will get the answer. You always know what is best for you. You always know like the things that are the most important, you know, important for you. And only through quieting the mind can you really do this. And I always recommend having a journal next to you, keeping it there. If something comes up, write it down. Allow yourself to process it later. Just write without any hesitation, because when we hesitate or edit it while we're doing it, then we might distract ourselves or prevent ourselves from the truth actually coming out. And there's, you know, this interesting concept that the more time you spend in white space or alone, the more memories that you can pull from. So when you pull memories, you actually can remember where that trauma or that negative thing happened to you that is preventing you from being the happiest, healthiest version of yourself.
So one of the words that you used when you were talking about this exercise was clarity. You wanted people to really try and give themselves space to understand the thoughts that are going on in their head. And the tool that you gave was breathing. How does someone use breathing to achieve clarity?
Yeah, so our minds are constantly going in a million directions, right? So you can sit and have thousands of different thoughts, and it's kind of, my coach Emily Fletcher always says that, you know, it's kind of like a tree. It can go out in a million branches, but with the breath, it's very linear. It's in and out. And there, you know, there's lots of different techniques of how to breathe and all these different ideas, which you can research. But I think just even taking 5 minutes and focusing on your breath, because your breath brings you back into the present moment and lets go of anxiety. So I always say with my clients, say, well, it's one thing to have a coaching call where, you know, I'm probably not going to have anxiety, but I have anxiety on Sunday night when I'm opening my fridge. I have anxiety in the dressing room. I have anxiety when I am, you know, with my ex-boyfriend. And how do I remove that? And I say, connect with your breath. It's the only thing that you have all the time that you can connect with, where you are present. Like, you can create that present moment of, there's no fear of the future, there's no anxiety of the past or vice versa, and you're just connected to your truth and yourself, and you realize how powerful that is to be alive. And it's just something that has been incredibly powerful for my clients. It's so simple. It's, you know, take a step away from wherever you are where you're having that anxiety, and take 2 minutes to really, 2, 5 minutes, 10 minutes if you need, and connect to your breath.
How often do you do that on?
So it's interesting. I used to have extremely bad anxiety around my body. I would have panic attacks to the point where I couldn't get out of bed. It was very, very bad. And until recently, I never really talked about how severe my anxiety and eating disorders were. So during that time, I was doing deep breathing. And I would take, you know, essential oils to change the vibration and really create a new space. I would do saging. I would sit with myself several times a day. Now it's more, I meditate every day for 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night. And whenever I have little glimpses of anxiety starting, I'll take 5 minutes. And it's kind of just something that I've accepted, like, hey, I need a break. I'm going to take 5 minutes for myself. And then I can come back to the conversation or wherever I am with much more clarity and truth for myself, because 90% of the time what we fear isn't what we're really fearing, or what we're having anxiety about isn't what we're really having anxiety about. And by taking that break, you can really figure it out and say, okay, it's not actually my boyfriend, it's me, or it's something else outside of what's really going on, or maybe it's just that I haven't eaten yet today, or maybe, you know, there's a million things and we always think it might be something else. By taking that space, we can really figure it out within ourselves.
Mm. Now, when it comes to using tools or strategies like breathing, for example, were you just instantly good at it, or did it take a lot of work? And is this the kind of thing that takes a lot of work for most people to really?
So it doesn't take work. It just takes discipline. And the reason why it's so hard for most people is because we don't want to face ourselves. And the reason is because we know deep down there's probably something that we have to address, but only by stirring that up can we let it go to finally give ourselves freedom, right? So it isn't so much that it's challenging. It's more just the discipline and creating habits. So it's one thing to change thought, I can tell you today, yes, breathing is an amazing technique, and you might think, okay, yes, it's great. But to actually change the behavior, it has to become habitual and it has to become part of a habit. So I always recommend set an alarm, like make a commitment to yourself, even if it's just breathing, even if it's just 5 minutes of focused breath, even if you just take 10 deep breaths, that might not seem like many, but that's, you know, that's a very great place to start, of just becoming more conscious of your breath. And there's so many cool tools now. I mean, there's apps, there's like devices that you can put on your belt that are coming out that basically show how steady your breath is and if you're being caused by stress. So if you need something to hold you accountable, there's ways to do it. But I always say you have to change the habit. And the problem is we don't want to face ourselves, so we keep ourselves so distracted. But in the long term of life, if you learn these very simple concepts, you're going to be much happier, much healthier, a lot less anxiety, and just be overall have that clarity and calm throughout the day, which is what we're all searching for.
So if we can use the body to influence and calm the mind, say by using breathing, how does the mind then influence the body? When you and I were talking before this show, you emailed me a really interesting point. You said people who have trouble moving forward in their lives can get knee pain.
Yes. So there's, there's these studies around the fact that we hold, based on our subconscious mind, we can actually see where we hold pain in our body. So let's say you have a knee issue or an ankle issue or a wrist ankle or whatever the case may be. Each area of your body reflects a different patterning in your subconscious mind. And Louis Hay is one of the big speakers on this. And she's been this phenomenal kind of person who has written about these patterns. And I use them for my clients where, you know, we'll look at, okay, you're having pain in your knee. Where is the block happening in your life? And it's very relative. So like, you know, I'm having issues with moving forward. Maybe that person's trying to move across the country or change jobs, or maybe they're just stuck and they're in limbo, and yet they're causing and creating pain to actually prevent that move or prevent furthering their life in a happy, healthy way. It's funny, humans like being comfortable, and it's a bizarre thing to think of, but we would rather stay in pain than move forward if it means that we have to shift and change and become different. But I always say on the other side of that line, once you move past it, your life becomes free. And in that space, it's just incredible for me to see people who are excited about this information once they finally realize, and they're like, wow, can I really get rid of this pain in my life? And absolutely, it's just about reprogramming thoughts.
So what might be some of those patterns of ways that the mind can affect the body? Can you give us a few examples there?
So you mean like if...
So if you said moving forward physically brings pain to the parts of your body that might actually make you physically move forward, like your knee.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So like, yeah. So like lower back pain could be stability, or your hips would be stability, or feeling of instability in your life. And you know, when I was dealing with my eating disorder, I was doing a lot of affirmations around self-love, because when you're restricting food, or when you're binging, it's because you're not feeling nourished and loved. So this concept of using affirmations about self-love and self-esteem and building your self-confidence, and things along those lines, where the affirmation reflects what you're actually going through. And I always recommend, so a lot of times I hear that people say, well, I don't really resonate with that person's voice on that meditation, or I don't resonate with, you know, with that affirmation, or that just doesn't make sense for me. And again, our thoughts become our lives. So if something doesn't resonate with you, it's important to find an affirmation that does. And I always recommend recording your own affirmations in your own voice and your own meditation in your own voice, because if you can believe yourself saying it, it becomes much more powerful than having someone else say it to you. So I had a client yesterday say, I was doing Headspace and this guy's voice, I saw a picture of him and I just didn't believe him. And I was like, okay, so we're going to record a meditation in your voice so that you can believe this and it will help shift your subconscious pattern, you know, and your thoughts around this. So I always say, you know, record it in your own voice, pick affirmations that resonate with you, pick tools and techniques that resonate with you, make sure that you're willing to believe it at your core, because that's really what will create change.
I like that idea. That's a good one. What about lack of self-belief? How could that physically show up?
Like lack of belief in yourself? So I find that actually a lot of people have digestive issues over this, and I've seen that quite often where we hold a lot of emotion in our intestinal tract and our digestive tract. So I've seen a lot of like traumatic situations where they've just carried it through their whole life, and they've been a lot of my clients have been diagnosed with IBS or leaky gut syndrome. And we always work around where is it that you're holding that trauma, and a lot of times it's in the stomach, because it's your life is your breath, right? It's what you're breathing in and out, and that's fueling you, and so it's definitely, you know, that aspect of when you're cringing up and you're holding it all in. But there's several places, you know, you can hold it. And I always look directly for Lewis Hay's affirmations of what is directly linked to the subconscious patterns as well.
So for people out there listening to this who aren't necessarily trained in these kinds of areas, but let's say might be interested in finding out if this is affecting them or have a suspicion that it is, I'm going to guess that one of the suggestions that you would use for personal discovery would be journaling. Is that, would that be a tool that you would throw out?
Yeah, I think journaling is one of the absolute best things you can do, because again, we don't want to face what is in our minds. And when we put our thoughts on paper, it's in front of us and we actually have to confront it. And when we can confront it, we can then heal. And journaling can act in really powerful ways in that it can pull out thoughts we didn't know exist. So if you do free flow journaling, let's say you do a meditation for 5 minutes and you clear your mind and then you allow yourself to just write whatever comes to your mind, you're actually pulling from your subconscious thoughts that are existent and repressed, which is one way. Another way of journaling is through forgiveness. So you can write out an experience that happened to you and put all of, you know, all the details in, and then do a cleansing ceremony or burn it or allow yourself to let it go. Or, you know, I even recommend putting your forgiveness letter on a sacred altar that you keep in your home. That's like the sacred space that finally when you're ready, you can let go of, because a lot of times people aren't ready to let go of traumatic things that have happened in their life. Journaling can be a great way of just tracking what you're eating and how you feel around food. So I always recommend, instead of doing a food journal per se, where you track everything such as, you know, the carbs and the calories and all of those things, I say, why don't you, and I always encourage this, is doing a journal around the emotional components of food. So how do you feel before you eat? How do you feel after? How do you feel when you wake up in the morning? What times are you eating? And when you start to journal the actual emotions around food, you'll very quickly realize patterns that exist. So whether you're binging on Sunday night because you're having anxiety around Monday morning, if you're binging or having anxiety around food midday at work because, you know, that's when you and your boss have your, you know, daily meeting, you'll start to see these patterns that exist, and then you can eventually shift them to say, okay, during that time, I need to really be conscious and mindful of what I'm eating. That's another great way as well. And then also provoking questions, of course. So a lot of times we don't know what to even ask ourselves, right? So we might say, okay, like, I don't even know where to begin with digging up my subconscious. But through using journaling prompts and asking yourself questions that have been written by, you know, a coach or someone inspiring or an expert, you can actually start pulling stuff out, because they're asking the questions that they know will really help shift thought.
So having been through a lot of your work now, this is really a big part of what you work on and what you suggest for people. How can someone know if they're actually getting a positive result out of journaling? Like, how can they know if progress is being made? Is it because they start feeling uncomfortable about questions that start to pop up, or it's a lot easier to listen to their subconscious?
Yeah, so journaling should actually just be a release. It shouldn't feel hard and it shouldn't feel like work. And it should be very intimate and confidential, and it should be like a sacred space. So whether you're doing, I always say, make sure that you're, so even the space that you're in within your home is so important for creating mindfulness and positivity and healing and weight loss. I always say, if you're going to journal in your kitchen, make sure you feel really good. And make sure you feel really good in a sacred space. So I recommend creating a sacred space in your home. And to be short, it's just this area where you kind of fill it with beautiful things. And it's kind of, it could be a 2-foot by 3-foot space that you go to, it where you feel safe and protected, and you feel like anything can come up there and you'll be okay. And that's a great place to journal in. And I always find that it's a release for clients, and to really see if you're getting the benefit of it, I think it takes, you know, it's like anything, you're changing habit and then you're changing behavior, and it takes a little bit of time. But I can confidently say every one of my clients who have done journaling on a consistent basis has found it to be extremely healing for them.
I think if you really commit to the process, it's hard for it not to.
Yeah, it's really about all of these things. You know, the thing that I teach is that I can teach you about kale or green juice, but the thing is, most people already know that they should be eating healthier. They know I can say, is kale healthy for you? And they'll say yes. And I'll say, you know, should you be eating veggies? Yes. But the problem is that until we really reprogram this thinking, and there's this feeling inside of them that they want to be alive, no, you're not going to reach for those foods anyway. So the thinking process has to come first. And we live in such a world of urgency, and we live in such a world of diet to diet to diet, that until we change thinking, it's not going to really make a difference. Because I can tell you all day that kale is good and it will sit in your fridge, if you don't have that self-awareness and the self-love to want to make the changes. And I find that even after people go through kind of this reprogramming techniques, they're excited and they want to do the research. Like, they want to find out what the best supplements are. They want to find out what the best superfoods are. They're getting on all these amazing podcasts, listening to them nonstop, figuring out really what's going to work for their best body. And they don't really, you know, they can use a coach or an expert to fine tune things, but they're so excited about living and they're so excited about creating a healthy life that they don't, you know, need to go from one diet and expert to the next and blame that coach or that expert when it doesn't work.
Absolutely. Now the area that you've chosen to address specifically with a lot of your work is weight loss. And having been through your program, I noted that you've made a really big deal at the start to really talk about someone's why and the motivating force behind weight loss. Do you want to talk?
Yeah, so there has to be a why, because if you don't have a why, your subconscious patterning is going to pull you away. So I always say, write your why. Why are you doing this? And the most important why is yourself. But there can be, you know, external factors as well, whether it's your kids, you want to live and be a good example for your children and your family, and you want to create a healthy relationship with your spouse or your partner, and you want to, your why can be, I want to go on a, you know, trek across the country, or I want to climb this mountain. And there can be outside inspiration as well, but your why has to be within yourself and has to come from you. So it could be, you know, I'm ready to let go of the pain that I was caused as a kid. I'm ready to release it. I'm ready to allow myself to be happy and free and feel supported and really build this confidence. And that why is personal for you. And having it written out is very important, because you will always be triggered by your subconscious. Even myself, I still have moments where I think, oh, well, you know, if I did this extreme thing for 7 days, I could be ready for my vacation next week. And in that moment, I have to be like, what is your why? Your why is to be healthy. It's not to go back on a quick diet, or why did you choose this path? So we all have those kind of thoughts, but it's how do we react to those thoughts? And having your why there that you can pull up at any time will say, okay, subconscious, it's just a pattern that I had experienced a long time ago, but I'm sticking to this path. And having it right in front of you is so powerful to say, okay, this is my path. I'm moving forward and I'm dedicating myself to this commitment.
So one thing that I've learned recently, which I think you might enjoy, is something called the Dan Sullivan question, which is named after a man called Dan Sullivan. And he says to really kind of get this answer out of people, because usually the first one that we get, if we ask someone, why do you want to achieve this, is somewhat incomplete. He would say to really begin to delve into this, the question that you should ask someone is, if we were having this conversation, let's say it's about weight loss, if we were having this conversation about weight loss a year from now, what would have needed to happen for this to have been a total and complete success and get the person to list out all the improvements in their life that they would have looked for and then figure out what exactly it is that all those things improve? And usually it's not, oh, I want to lose weight because, you know, whatever, like this surface desire that most people would come up with, and I do it as well, off the top of our head. What do you?
Yeah, so I completely agree. And that's why I don't say, that's why I always say throw your scale out. Don't focus on the physical and focus on the emotion and the feeling, because that is what is sustainable. So what do you want to feel in a year? And I always have my clients create a list. So I want to feel what feel, so feel strong and confident and filled with self-love and filled with self-esteem and, you know, and whatever kind and happy, and I want to feel joyful. And all of those things don't come from going on another diet, because the thing is, you can feel that way with or without weight loss, right? So those things you can begin to feel now. And so that's the most important part, is creating these feelings and these emotions about what you want to feel in a year. And if we just focus on the physical, your physical will always change. There'll be up 5 pounds, down 10 pounds. You know, your physical is going to change throughout your life, but your mental and what you feel and your emotional components can sustain, right? And that's what's going to sustain you to stay healthy and want to stay healthy your whole life. So I say, yeah, if you want to look from a year from now, how is it that you want to feel is much more important than the way you want to look. And if you focus on those things, again, you'll focus on a life that's fulfilling. You'll focus on the things you need, the right kind of movement, the right kind of food, the amount of water. You're going to cut out the sugar and the dairy, you know, maybe the dairy that's causing inflammation and the alcohol and all those things that I can already tell you that are wrong. But if we aren't focused on the end result of feeling happy, it won't do anything. Because I know a lot of people who are very thin that come to me that are very unhappy. And if you look from the outside, it looks like they're in perfect health, but their minds aren't.
That's the funny thing as well that I remember about trying to lose weight myself many years ago, is that I thought, I seriously believed if I could just lose weight and look like all my friends, my entire life would be so much better. It's interesting how we build up these things that we really want to be like amazing, world-changing things, and then you get there and it's like, yeah, you know, it's awesome that I've lost weight, but
now what, right? So it's always like, so what? I've lost the weight, but I still feel empty inside, or there's still something. And the reason for that is because so the voids are still there. So, and what I mean by that is that when you look at the areas of your life, you're usually using food. Well, a lot of people I know are using food to fill the voids in other areas of their life. So whether that's or to control. So if you have an eating disorder, to control, or if you're, you know, gaining weight, it's to fill a void. So when you lose the weight, the void probably within your relationship or your finances or what, you know, your creativity or maybe your spiritual outlook it's still there. So you're like, I lost all this weight, but the void is still there. Why don't I feel better? So I always say fill the voids and create a healthier whole circle first. And then your weight will balance out, you know, when you're not using food, because food is the quickest, easiest, fastest way to fill a void. A lot of other people use drugs and alcohol and sex, but food is so convenient, right? And it's cheap. That's what most people use.
You can do it in public.
Exactly. And you can, and the excuses around it are so easy, and there's always justification, and there's always kind of this urgency to fill a void. So whether you had a shitty day at work and you're like running home to get food, or whether your relationship, you got in a fight with your relationship, you know, over the weekend, and Monday morning come and you're binging because you don't know if you want to stay in the relationship, you know, all those voids are being filled By food, and when you let go of that need to fill those voids and say, I'm going to work with a relationship coach to make my relationship great. I'm going to really work on my career and figure out what's going on there. I'm going to work on creativity and getting a creative outlook. I'm going to work on my movement, and maybe I won't go to the gym, but I'll go to dance class, and I'm going to work on the spiritual component, even if I'm not spiritual, but finding myself through meditation and my awareness. Then there's no need to fill it with an external factor that's not making you happy and healthy.
They say that 80% of weight loss is done in the kitchen. I'm starting to think 80% of it's done in the mind. Now, I have heard you talk in your work about writing letters to your body, and I wanted to talk about that, but now I'm thinking it'd be more important to write a letter to this void that lives somewhere in our life or to our subconscious mind. So do you want to talk about writing letters to ourselves and what you actually are supposed to say in a letter to yourself?
Yeah, so letters are really powerful because, again, it's making you address a topic that you don't necessarily want to address, but then by doing that, you heal. So a lot of times we'll think, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, just avoid this topic over and over again in my life. And with writing a letter, so quickly with the body, it's, you know, it's writing a letter to your body. A lot of times we have this disconnect where we think on a physical level that our body's just going to adjust, but we don't realize what we've actually put our bodies through. So whether it's, you know, and when I wrote mine, I'll give you an example. I said, dear body, I am so sorry. And I do this often. Now it's more like once a year, but I, when I was healing, I did this all the time. Like, I'm so sorry for putting you through, you know, hundreds of pounds of weight loss up and down over decades. I'm sorry for the all the diet pills and the laxatives and the starvation and the binging and all the stress that I put on you. Thank you for physically carrying me through this world so that I can serve and be of service and share this experience on earth. So that was, you know, that was my letter. Everyone's letter is going to be different, but in terms of filling void as well, you can even write like, dear self, I'm sorry that I haven't, you know, been fulfilling my life with a creative, inspiring career that has a great outlook and something that I want to, you know, have for the rest of my life. And by apologizing, you accept it, and then you allow yourself to work through it. So that way you can address that there's a problem and think, okay, what would it feel like to really now have a career that really inspires me, or a relationship that really inspires me, or whatever the case may be. But just writing these letters of apology allows you to address it and then get rid of the shame and guilt around having created it. Because a lot of times we just feel bad. And that's another aspect of weight loss, is we feel bad that we created these kind of negative, icky situations in our life, which then we self-sabotage because of the guilt with food and creating that buffer of weight because we don't want to actually address the issue. So it really keeps coming, you know, coming back to our minds. And with the kitchen, it's even important to create, you know, 80% of your weight loss, if you know, this quote of being in your kitchen. Well, how does your kitchen make you feel? Does it make you feel inspired? How do you want to feel there? Take 5 minutes and meditate in your kitchen and really visualize how you want to feel in that space, because, that is just as important as well. And if you have negative emotions attached to your kitchen, then that will create more of it, because again, like attracts a like.
Now, we can't spend all day by ourselves working on ourselves. A lot of the time of day that we have is around other people. And you say relationships should be examined, or the way that what we bring to a relationship and how we think about it should be examined as a reflection of personal awareness. And there are some important considerations to be aware of around personal relationships, like, am I actually operating as the best version of myself around this person?
Yep.
Do the behaviors and attitudes of these other people around me actually support my goals, or are their behaviors and attitudes likely to rub off on me and make it more difficult for me to achieve my goal? How does someone begin tackling this?
Yeah, so this is going to be tough to hear, because it's hard to accept that the people in our lives are really a mirror of ourselves and their behaviors, whether we're using their behaviors and their interactions as a justification or whatever the case may be. Again, our subconscious of what is comfortable to us, we attract people in our lives that are really a reflection of that. And as you work on yourself and take responsibility and move towards a happier, healthier existence, the people in your life will either elevate and raise to your vibration, or they're going to leave. And again, that's really hard to hear, but I see so often, time and time again, you know, my boyfriend doesn't want to cook. He doesn't want to go out. He doesn't want to, you know, go to the market with me. He doesn't want to do movement or go to the gym. He wants to sit around all day. And using that as a crippling excuse to not be healthy is really just a reflection of something that's happening within them and something of their block of wanting to be healthy. So I always say work on yourself first and really look inside yourself and then begin to quietly start analyzing where these patterns are coming from and see how they're a reflection of you, and then move through them by having open conversation of, I want to be healthy, I want to be happy, will you support me in this? And then at those moments, those are big decisions that individuals have to make. And I've had some clients who have built these incredible powerhouse relationships because they both have stepped up, and I've seen some relationships end, and even friendships end, because, you know, I had a client who, she said, I just can't go out and drink every night anymore. So I really have to change my community and my friendships. And that was a big decision for her. You know, and now she's traveling all the world and super inspired, and her life has shifted. So it's all, where do we want to be in that year? Where do you want to be next year? And what kind of people do you want around you supporting yourself in that?
I like the way that Bob Proctor would put this, because he talks that about quite a lot. He'd say, if you feel like you're not the best version of yourself around someone, or if their attitudes are affecting you in a way that you don't like, visit less often and don't stay for.
Right. And then you'll start to see, exactly. You'll start to see like how much happier you are when you do start to have different conversations. And I always say, well, if you really want to know, record yourself for an entire day. Like take out an audio recording and see what you're talking about with certain people, or record yourself for a week. And that might sound absolutely ludicrous, but like, we don't even realize what we're talking about on a consistent basis. You're calling your girlfriend and you're chatting about how big your legs are and how you can't fit into your jeans and you don't want to go to this party because you're bloated. And then you call the next person and they're on their way to the gym, and like, then that gets you super inspired. Seeing the difference is incredible, you know, and seeing just the conversations we have and the thoughts we have and how we feel in different environments is huge. And slowly those will change. It's not about leaving them behind. It's just, you know, you can't uplift people from a place when you're not happy and healthy. You have to get to that place. And if they want to be inspired by you, incredible, amazing. Be there for them and let them know what you did. And that's what I always do. I say, like, you know, I'm self-disciplined. I do my meditations. Like, if you want to jump on board, I'm here to help you 100%. And most people amazing in the world we're living in are looking for inspiration and they want it. So most people I've found are just on board and they're ready for this information.
Mm. Well, you've certainly given us all a lot to think about here. And like I said, I have been going through your Meditate Slim program, and I'll say this about that, which is something that I've never really noticed before. Every time I sat down to go through one of the modules in your class, when I got up at the end, I felt way better.
Thank you. That's so nice to hear.
So for everyone out there, you're most welcome. It was a very good class. So for everyone out there who's listening, where can they learn more about you? Where can they get it?
Yeah, so my website is Sarah Ann Stewart, Sarah with an H, Anne, and then Stewart.com. And
Stewart
my
with
courses,
a
yeah, Stewart with a W. And then Meditate Slim, like SLIM is my course. And I have a holistically slim community I just started online. But you can find all my social media links and handles on my website. And I would love to connect. I connect with women and people all over the world and men who are really shifting their lives. So it's so inspiring for me and just listening to your podcast and just seeing this global raise of vibration is so exciting. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us, and send a shout out to your dad as well for helping you out learning about the subconscious mind.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Authentic Wellness Radio.